Welcome to The Offer, the no sugar added approach to the talent triangle with an unfiltered view of employers, candidates, and recruiters. I am your host, Michael Glinter.
The Offer, unfiltered.
Before we get started, just a reminder, if you need any type of services, questions, you are looking to do a sponsorship on my show, or you have needs as far as resumes or anything as far as the staffing industry, please email me at michael@michaelglinter.com. Again, that is michael@michaelglinter.com, so we can connect. You can also check me out on social media. And please, as a reminder, don't forget, you can subscribe to this podcast to get weekly updates, as well as please pass along information to your friends and family. Over the last year, we spent a lot of time focused on diversity and inclusion, but really kind of getting more people into organizations. But I really, this year, want to focus more heavily on the inclusion and even more so the sense of belonging within the workplace. And I brought an awesome, entertaining, energetic, and very well thought out guy onto my show today. His name is Dr. Steve, and he's going to talk to us a little bit about how we drive and integrate the D&I culture in the workplace. So I'd like to welcome Dr. Steve.
Hello, Steve. How are you?
I'm okay. How are you?
Good. So do I have to call you Dr. Steve?
No.
Okay. I just want to make sure. So it's, you know, to my audience, we are recording on the day after the first LGBTQ person had been elected to be on the presidential cabinet. Pete Buttigieg. Obviously, he has to go through his nomination process, which, you know, hopefully our crazy politicians will just say yes. But at the end of the day, it's kind of ironic that we're talking today. Not at all planned. Obviously, this podcast will be produced and put out there after the fact, maybe even after he gets nominated or officially put into office. But it's kind of ironic to today's topic. Over the last year, I've done a lot on my podcast to promote diversity and inclusion. And I've had a lot of amazing people on my show, including people from the LGBTQ community, including people that are transgender, which has my highest rated podcast was with my friend Lucas, who's transgender. So it's been a great year in 2020. And now going into 2021, I want to continue kind of bridging the gap a little bit more. I think that this year it was all about recognizing and understanding what issues there are in the workplace, understanding from both sides' point of view, you know, the struggles. Talked to a lot of companies about how they are addressing diversity and inclusion. And going into 2021, I think the biggest focus for me and my audience is to really focus on the inclusion part, being understanding of all people and kind of bringing everybody together. And what not best to do that with somebody from the LGBT community, Dr. Steve, to talk a little bit about kind of his experiences in business and D&I and kind of give them some ideas as far as how you drive success in collaboration with all different types of people in the workplace. So with that being said, as I take a breath, what I'd like you to do is just start off by introducing yourself to my audience, how you got to where you are, what are you doing today, and kind of what your thought process is as far as spreading the word out.
Yeah, so thanks so much for having me on, Michael. So Top Dog Learning Group, we are we like to use the term boutique consulting firm, meaning we're small, but we really sit in the center of, we put our little doghouse in the center of three different areas. We focus on leadership and organizational development, diversity, inclusion, and belonging, and then change management and resiliency in times of change. And a lot of times when we work with groups, it's an intersection of more than just the one. Usually it's all three, quite frankly. And so take a jump backwards. I've been in the leadership and diversity space pretty much my whole career. I spent some time as an internal consultant with places like the Walt Disney Company, with IBM. I was with IBM as actually a change management consultant. I've been doing Top Dog as a full-time gig for a little over 12 years now. And it's been really interesting just to go into organizations, work with both Fortune 500s and some not-for-profits to really help them be more consciously inclusive leaders and focus on kind of creating that sense of belonging for everyone within their particular workplace.
Awesome. Awesome. So I'm going to start with a tough question. I don't know. I like to throw curveballs.
That's fine. I have coffee.
In recent weeks, I had a gentleman contact me and tell me that my podcast was promoting discrimination on him. And I thought, that's really a weird thing to say. So I called him up and I'm like, okay, so what, you got to explain, because I don't get it. He says, I am a white, straight male, 45. And I feel as if you're pushing everything but me. And I thought to myself, wow, that's crazy. No one's ever accused me of being discriminatory. And I never thought of it that way, right? So when you're thinking of inclusion, how do you go about making sure that that includes everyone, including the what we call the, I don't even know if you want to call them norms, the ideological norm of what, you know, non-diverse is, right? Being a white Caucasian male, how do you make sure that it's not a we're all against you type of strategy, and it's more so let's all, including you, be a part of it?
Yeah, it's a really interesting question. I actually faced a lot when I go into to go do, you know, consciously inclusive workshops with clients, and when I could do those things, go somewhere. It's, you can definitely tell who was voluntold to be in these types of sessions. You know, and I say voluntold meaning their boss said it's a really good idea if. And so, you know, you have varying degrees of why people go down, that people and organizations embrace being more consciously inclusive. And so definitely have encountered folks like this gentleman you just spoke of. And so what I typically start my conversation with is two things. The first is understanding why organizations, why companies focus on being more inclusive. And there's kind of like a continuum. On one side, it's the punitive stuff. Hey, if we don't, we get in trouble because depending on where you live and what country you're operating out of and all that good stuff, there's laws that say you have to do certain things. So there's kind of that side. On the complete opposite side of that same continuum is, you know what, it makes the world just that much more better when we're including everybody. So kind of the more, you know, kind of from the heart center piece. And then in the center of that somewhere is, you know what, it makes really good business sense. And you know, don't take my word for it. If you just Google business case for diversity, you will find a ton of really great, well-researched studies and articles and all sorts of stuff that show that when businesses, when organizations have more diverse leadership, have more diverse employee makeup, they do a heck of a lot better than those who are more homogeneous. And so I kind of summarize it from that way for those folks who definitely are voluntold to be in these sessions, that, you know what, I would love you to be in the spot where I am, where it's like, you know, this makes the world a better place. I know that we can acknowledge, and I'm not a lawyer, but we can acknowledge that, hey, there's punitive things you should do. But if nothing else, please understand that this makes business sense. This makes the right sense and success for your organization. Would you agree with that? Yeah, they do. And so then you start from there. And yeah, ultimately, I'd love to get everybody in the entire planet to that whole, this is the right thing to do. It makes the world a better place, but not everyone's there. So you kind of acknowledge that first. And then the second part of the conversation to kind of address this person is people use the conversation or the talking point of privilege. I don't like that word. I mean, I think it's accurate, but I don't like to use that word because of people like the gentleman you just spoke of. It's a trigger word sometimes. You know, you're against me. What are you talking about? I earned everything I have, blah, blah, blah. Got it. Yeah, that's true. But you know, you start with, I use the term advantage, and you say, you know what? I hear what you're saying. I totally get it. And you know what? I'm a white cisgendered dude. But I'm also gay, but I understand what you're saying. But what I see as my advantage is I need to now open up the doors for those who don't have that same advantage. And that's the opportunity to work with people like the gentleman you spoke of. It's to say, this is not a punitive thing. This is not saying you don't count, you're not valid. No, let's just acknowledge that, you know, for X period of time, people like you have set up the system, the organization, the society to kind of benefit you. And you can't refute that. And so our opportunity, if we are in that particular demographic, is to open the doors and be inclusive for everybody so that we're all kind of coming at it from that same starting point, if we can.
What do you think the biggest challenge that most companies have on accepting all people and being inclusive? Because I don't think a lot of companies really understand inclusion. And maybe you want to go into that, but what do you think the biggest challenge is for companies? Because we know that companies hire diversity many times because they know that they have to, not because they want to. But what's the biggest challenge or the biggest roadblock for companies to realize that they're not getting people, all people to work together and be a part of the organization?
Yeah, I think it goes back to the three kind of buckets on the continuum, the business case in that middle, and then the world is better and we stay out of trouble on the other two ends. Mm-hmm. And so I think what organizations are finally understanding is that it is the right thing to do, but so what? Some organizations I work with, they're like, hey, we'd love to, but we also have boards of directors and shareholders we have to answer to. I'm like, fantastic, got it. So let's go back to that business case for it. Don't you want to have the widest net for your market share? Don't you want your employee base to look like your customer base so they can relate better? Don't you want to have varying degrees of people in your R&D area, for example, so that you're not just approaching a problem or a solution or a product from one specific perspective? Quick story, I was working with a client and they were actually producing a product. And they realized that everybody in the room, and I think it was something like, it was some household utensil, I forget exactly what it was, but they realized everyone in the room was right-handed. And it just kind of stuck them that, oh my gosh, that's X percent of the market we're not thinking about if we don't design this so that's ambidextrous so that left-handed customers could use it too. And so that's a small example, but that's things that organizations are starting to really understand that, we do need to approach these solutions from a variety of perspectives, or we're going to miss the boat on not just product, but also on customer and really having impact. And
Do you think that this is another, curveball question. Do you think that our president actually helped make diversity include the needs for diversity and inclusion greater?
I don't think so.
Meaning he put a spotlight on the fact that we're so divided.
Well, I think it was there before. And I do agree that spotlight is probably a good term to use. What I think it's been a blessing and a curse. There's been this polarization on us versus them. And I think it's been at a cost for those who are trying to be inclusive for all. It's not easy to embrace somebody whose values are insanely different than yours. And that's not an easy thing to do. However, if we're going to coexist in this role, we need to find a way to do that. And I think that notion of, we'll just say, my party versus your party or whatever, that goes so much broader than just political party affiliation in the United States. And I think there is an opportunity for us to learn from this polarization and find strategies and ways to kind of at least empathize and appreciate the other perspective, because in essence, that's kind of the root of what being inclusive is saying that, I may not be who you are, but I'm still going to at least create a space of respect and value for you to have that perspective that may not be like mine.
A lot of recently I've noticed ever since, kind of George Floyd and all the Black Lives Matter movement really kind of stepped up, I've noticed an increasing amount of company promoting and hiring and growing African Americans in the workplace, putting them in higher level posts and whatnot. And that's amazing. That's the direction that we want to go. It's the direction we want to be in. It's something that I think was long past due. But my concern is that, and again, nothing against the African American community, they put such a huge spotlight on Black Lives Matter that all the other diverse community people are now being, pushed aside for these types of initiatives, almost not getting a fair chance. I had a woman on one of my shows, we were talking about diversity and inclusion, and she turned it into more of a conversation about racism and how only an African-American person can run a D&I organization. And I was like, no, I don't agree. And it was a very tough conversation because I said to her, I said, why is it that you think you're more qualified to run a D&I organization versus myself? And she came back to, well, we've been oppressed longer, basically. What are your views on it? I mean, do you think that we're moving in the right direction, but we're also potentially segmenting too much attention on one versus the other? Because it's not really inclusive. It's really more now we're hiring more African Americans or promoting more African Americans to counter this argument that we're not. But what about the handicapped people? What about the veterans? What about the gay, the LGBTQ community? What about those people? I mean,
so, and I might be wrong, but Michael, what I'm hearing kind of between the lines in that question is it's almost getting into the shades of, well, all lives matter too. And that's, I don't want to go there because I don't believe that. While yes, of course, all those different shades of the cornucopia that makes us a diverse human beings is awesome. I do think it's time that we as a broader society do focus on the Black experience and the oppression that's happened. And I would not agree with your other guests to say that only African-American or people of color can run a D&I function in a business. No, I don't agree with that. However, I do highly support the spotlight and the shining on, you know, we have been neglecting our Black brothers and sisters way too long. And I just, you know, talk to my friends of color who are just like, do you know what it's like to walk into a store and be followed all the time when you're just there shopping? Do you know what it's like to be sitting at a street light and there's a cop next to you and you have to put your hands higher on the steering wheel so they know where they are? I'm like, no, I don't. And so I think those types of behaviors, that unconscious bias, which I know you talked about in one of your previous episodes, but that unconscious bias absolutely needs to have a spotlight on it, needs to be thrown against the wall. We need to really dissect it and understand it. But I do believe that, yes, in addition to that spotlight, there is still an opportunity to have that spotlight on our people of differing abilities, on gender, on every single other facet of how we define diversity and inclusion. Because when I define it in all of my sessions, in my book, I use a fantastic model by these two incredibly smart women, Garden Schwartz and Rowe, and they have, it used to be four, now it's the five layers of diversity. And you know, at the core center of what makes every single human unique is our personality.
Right.
No, there will never be another Michael. There will never be another Steve. Even if we are both twins or whatever that looks like, there will always be that unique personality difference. That's the core. Mm-hmm. The next layer out is what's called internal dimensions. And that's things like race, ethnicity, gender, sexual orientation, physical ability. There's an asterisk on that one. I'll tell you why in a moment. But these are things that typically don't change within the course of our life. And when I start to work regarding organizations, you know, I kind of start to probe and say, you know, so how would you classify your sophistication of being inclusive on a scale of 1 to 10? They're like, oh, we're a 10. We're rocking and rolling. We have blank month. I'm like, that's a good start, but that's not fully inclusive. So then the next layer out, and I won't go into too much detail of the model, but the next layer out is what's called external dimensions. And these are things that still impact our uniqueness within the world, but are pretty malleable over our lifetime. Like, you know, our religion, education, job function that we might have, you know, different things about us, our physical appearance. And these change pretty often, but they still impact how we look at the world. And I think smart organizations are identifying that, yes, internal dimensions, race, ethnicity, gender, all that stuff, smurfly, as I say in the 80s, we need to focus on, but also be mindful that diversity is much broader than just the color of our skin or our gender or who we love. It's a lot of other things. And good organizations take that more inclusive approach to defining diversity than those who really narrowly focus it too far down.
Interesting. Okay. No, very good answer. I like that. So what about small business? You know, we know that there's proven studies that tell us that people's mindset around diversity and inclusion in the workplace stems from their social upbringing, the way they were raised, the environment they were raised in, et cetera. Large companies, you know, and not to use this as a crutch, but large companies have oftentimes, you know, have a spotlight on them. And so they have to be a much more mindful of who they hire, how they promote, et cetera, because they want to have a good position in life. They don't necessarily believe in, and I hate, again, I'm just trying to be politically correct. They don't necessarily always believe in the power behind it, but more so just the need behind it, right? Smaller businesses, however, don't have that. They don't have the spotlight, but they also don't have, they don't feel as compelled, I guess would be the word, to be as so harmonizing in the workplace. But the, if you look at the big picture of it, small business is really what makes up, you know, a good portion of the community that's out there. It's a lot of what people do. It's getting smaller because of, you know, crazy automation and tech, but it's certainly a big part of society. How do you change the mindset of people? So someone's grown up in the backwoods of Oklahoma who has never been around people of color, never been around gay people, and they're suddenly a business owner, and now they're suddenly being told, listen, you really need to be more embracing. You really need to be more open to all different types of people. You know, let me tell you some of the reasons why, but you get that underlying resistance because, you know, at the end of the day, they've always had a conservative mindset. How do you break into that?
Well, I'll go back to the answer I already shared is, you know, this, if someone is, you know, going into being inclusive, kicking and screaming, obviously there's some bigger things to kind of focus on. But the first thing I would do as a business owner to kind of focus in on your small business is to go back to the whole, here's the business case for being inclusive. And you know, as a small business owner, do you want to turn away customers? Do you want to disenfranchise potential paying clients? And I would, as a small business owner, I know I don't want to do that. And so I would probably approach it from that perspective and then try to kind of move the needle more toward that, you know what, this is the right thing to do kind of thing. And
yeah, but let me just say, well, hold on, but talk about, I hear you. We talked about it, obviously. But here's my thing now. And I want your honest opinion. Do you really, and this is obviously coming from two people that fall into the category of diversity and inclusion. Do you really feel like people, when they're going to determine where they're going to do business, look that closely at the D&I aspect of that company before they choose to do business there?
Yes. Absolutely.
Really?
Absolutely. Yes. With all of my heart. Yes. Because not everybody, but a lot more people are doing it. A lot of different age demographics are doing it increasingly more. And you have a lot of even a big investment firms who are looking at investing in companies that have certain value systems. And, you know, I mean, I'm part of a lot of love. Work with a lot of Fortune 500s as well. And so they get it, they know. And small businesses are slowly starting to get there, but I think consumers are insanely mindful of where are my consumer dollars going and do I want those to continue? I know, you know, obviously I have a heightened sense of awareness because I make sure that my money doesn't go to hate chicken or, you know, what other things that really don't like people like me and you. But I think if we take a broader step back, people really are starting to be more mindful of where they're shopping, where they're going, where their money is going after they make that purchase. And I think smart small business owners are aware of that and hopefully taking that to heart. Now, not everyone is, of course not. And they're gonna say, that's for, you know, people on the other two coasts, not here in the heartland or, you know, wherever that their more conservative values might be. But and that's fine. You know, but I think we have an opportunity to at least bring to light and help people be aware that, you know what, I'm not shopping with you because ... here's what I've seen. And with, you know, the blessing and the curse of social media, this is the blessing of it, where people can quickly bring that spotlight to those organizations that maybe aren't being super inclusive, and they have the opportunity to either say, nope, this is how we are, and that might attract certain members of the population, or they say, you know what, we don't want to be perceived like that, and maybe we do need to make some changes in order to be more inclusive.
Okay. So let's talk about how do leaders go about being more inclusive in the workplace?
Well, I think when you look at any kind of human behavior, and this is why I like, you know, having been a change consultant, because I get to understand how humans adapt to newness, whether it be being more inclusive or, you know, what everybody tends to do in January, and that's like be more healthy kind of thing. The process is kind of still the same, and there's, you know, psychological ways that we go through that and how we support that and all that good stuff. But the way I typically phrase it with my customers or my clients and my client partners is it's a really three-prong approach that a leader can take to be more consciously inclusive. And I frame it as the think in, speak up, and act out kind of method. And the think in part is it's about you first, leader. You have to start to identify your own self. You have to start to look at what potential unconscious biases do I hold that might be getting in the way of my performance, how I run my business, how I engage my team, et cetera. So you really have to do the inner work first. And then the speak up is really looking kind of around you in the immediate group. So it could be your team, your employees, the project you're on, you know, depending on where you're at within the business world. And that's looking at what am I doing in that smaller group to create and foster a sense of belonging for all of us. And side note, you hear diversity and inclusion that's often used. Smarter organizations are really kind of taking that a step further and creating what's called a sense of belonging. And that's where it kind of flips it around. It's not so much about the business or the workplace or the organization. It's about the individual members. Do they have that feeling of they belong, they're respected, they're trusted, they can bring their authentic selves to work? And that's, as we talk about being a consciously inclusive leader, that's really where we need to be focusing our energy is, am I creating an environment that people feel that they can belong and they have trust and they can bring their authentic selves to that workplace or that organization? So that's kind of the speak up part of area. And then the act out is looking at the bigger picture, the overall company or the workplace or, you know, wherever you're at, and looking at those bigger things, kind of more those systemic things that maybe are or aren't creating a culture of inclusion. So for example, I tell businesses big and small, look at your website. You know, what are the images, messages that are sending? You know, if you have a picture of a family, what kind of family is it? Is it the traditional, you know, young, white, 2.5 kids thing? Or are you representing maybe some other diverse family makeups? Little things like that go insanely far as to creating a way that me as that either consumer or the member of the group, the business, workplace, can find where I am or see someone like me, see that representation and feel a little bit more of that sense of belonging.
Excellent. What does a company do? How important is it for the company to promote D&I from the top? Do you feel like if a company hires a dynamic diversity candidate for instance, someone hires you, you're not at the top, you're mid-level. And you want to start creating an impact.
I'm a C-suite, baby.
Very funny. Well, I'm just hypothetically speaking, right? You get thrown into a mid-level job. You can tell that the level of importance of diversity and inclusion in the workplace is not there. You determine that part of it has to do with the fact that it's systemically not coming from the top. Can you still go in and effectively drive that type of a culture when the top is not doing it themselves?
You know, and this is a great question. It's one I face all the time, not just in the diversity and inclusion and belonging work that we do at Top Dog Learning Group, but really any learning initiative that we take up with a client. I always go in with a training is never a silver bullet. One workshop is not going to make somebody all sorts of inclusive and your workplace is just happy, shiny rainbows and unicorns and all that good stuff. It's a concerted effort and it comes from a variety of areas. And this is proven change management 101 kind of stuff. It's, yes, you can have those formal and informal learning experiences, but it takes one of the top three reasons, according to ProSci, which is a change management company, actually, that's the particular group that I'm affiliated with as far as like my certifications and stuff. They do a study every year and they say, why do change initiatives fail? Which, being more inclusive in the workplace, is a change initiative. You're trying to change human behavior to a certain outcome. And they find over and over every year that they do this study, and it varies level within each year, but it's always one of the top three. And that's the people don't embrace whatever change you're trying to do because of the perceived backing or support of the senior executives within the workplace.
Correct.
And I emphasize perceived because I've been with workplaces, organizations where, you know, the senior executive is like, hey, I signed the check to get, say, Steve and his team in there to do some stuff. So yeah, but you need to be perceived as the champion of this too. You can't just like kind of be in the background and be like, well, I supported it fiscally. No, you have to be the one out there and championing it. So I tell workplaces that or clients that, hey, we're happy to come in and do whatever it is that we need to do, but you need to have the buy-in of that senior leader. You need to have the buy-in of the mid-level folks too. You need to have a communication strategy that supports whatever training initiative or thing. You have to have a measurement strategy that says, how are we gonna know when we like did stuff good or we moved the needle a bit? What are we looking at to kind of to benchmark that? So these are all pieces that make up any sort of change initiative. And I am absolutely there to say, you know, me coming in and doing a 1 hour keynote on being a consciously inclusive leader absolutely will not change the needle. However, it might be that first talking point that the senior executive comes up and says, yes, what Steve said, that's great. And here's how we're going to live this on a day-to-day basis. That's where change happens.
What do you tell people that are in an organization that struggles to be inclusive, to have the strength to muddle through it, and or even the courage or the fearlessness to step up and say, hey, you know, we're missing something here? What do you say to them?
It's a great question. And it's actually one I talk about in my book, Pride Leadership, because I've been in that spot as a leader and as a member of a workplace where, you know, you want to create a workplace that's inclusive, that embraces all of us others. But sometimes it's hard and it's exhausting and it's a lot of work. So I kind of give advice to leaders in that situation. You know, you kind of just start to do some analysis within the workplace. You know, you start with the workplace values. You know, most organizations of even small size have on their website, have on their, you know, HR forms or the break room wall or whatever. These are the values that we want all of our employees to operate under. And so they have those there. And typically now you see, you know, folks saying, being inclusive, celebrating differences, some form of that is there. So you start with that. And then you also ask yourself, is this really the value that's being lived in this workplace? And to your scenario, Michael, I'm probably going to say the person would say no. So then you kind of have to understand, well, how important is that for me to work in a place that celebrates the differences that we all have? And obviously for me, who's in this space, that's like a massive high level one. For some people, they might be like, you know, I don't know. And so you really start to, and this is where you're doing analysis on personal values with organizational values. And are they aligned? Yes or no? And right. If they're not, then you make a decision as a member of that workplace to say, do I want to try and move the needle? Is this when I was at Disney, my mentor always would phrase things saying, is this the hill you want to die on? And you have to make that decision. And so that's a very individualistic approach to it. And I would never say, you know, you have to make change. I would love you to, but I know that some people, that's just not how they operate. That takes a lot of leadership courage, which some people may or may not have. But I think you as a workplace, you know, member of a workplace, have to make those decisions about, you know, is this the alignment with my values? And is this the fight to move the needle where I think it should be? And for some people, it's like, yes, fisticuffs, I'm ready to go. Others are like, you know what, maybe I'm going to take my toys and go find a place that really does embrace my authenticity and embraces kind of the difference that I bring to the table.
Gotcha. So your book, really quick pitch, what is it? What do people get from it? And why would people want to read it?
Yeah. So my book, Pride Leadership, Strategies for the LGBTQ Plus Leader to be the King or Queen of the Jungle. It really focuses on what I have seen to be the top six leadership competencies any queer person, as well as awesome allies, can really focus on to ultimately be more consciously inclusive. Things like, you know, being authentic, having courage, building empathy, effective communication, fostering relationships, and shaping culture. And so using these six is kind of the framework to really, really amp up your leadership awesomeness.
So it's catered towards people in the LGBT community, but people that are supporters of the LGBT community, will help them learn more about, you know, how these people could be a good part of their organization.
That, and it's also very personal. When the very first piece of feedback I had from my first editor, after she being the second person in the universe to read it, she said, "Steve, I have to tell you something." I'm like, "Oh no." And she's like, "I am not your target audience. I'm a white, cisgendered, straight woman." I'm like, "And?" She's like, "This is the book I wanted in my MBA program." I'm like, "What?" And she's like, "It's fun, but it's solid, you know, foundations." Of course, I'm an academic nerd. It's, you know, I didn't invent leadership. So, you know, but it's filled with cheeky dad humor on purpose because it's more fun to read. It's more memorable. She's like, she goes, "We need to degay the book." I'm like, "I hear what you're saying, but no, maybe, you know, we'll talk about another leadership book down the future." But I keep hearing feedback. I literally heard this yesterday. They're like, "This is not just for the gays. It really has benefited me as an ally to kind of approach leadership from this perspective as well."
Gotcha. Right. And that's what I was trying to get at, I guess, in a subtle way, is you're not, this is something that can help a lot of people, not just people in the LGBTQ community. Yeah. And a lot of the things that you talk about in the book are things that can be transferred in any type of management, not just, you know, that type of, or certain types of management. But
agree.
So I just want to make sure my audience was clear. Listen, you're awesome. Great, great information. Good dialogue. I will put all your information on the podcast notes so that when it goes air, people can get a hold of you, contact you, and potentially hire you for business down the road. I guess I wish you a wonderful and safe holiday.
Well, you too. And thank you so much for the conversation and the great questions, Michael.
All right. I'll talk to you soon.
Please remember to subscribe to my podcast. Also, please feel free to share, like, send, tag your friends. Let them have the opportunity to listen and understand and get a better viewpoint from the people that we talk to. Also, please don't forget, if you have any questions, you can email me at any time. And I hope you guys had a great day.